we'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. Later on, it's Adventure on the Continent of Africa with Tarzan, Lord of the Jungle. But first, on the lighter side, it's the Milton Berle Show. Milton Berle was one of the most notable failures of the airwaves, trying radio no less than six times between 1939 and 1949, when he finally gave up and went into television, adding solid evidence to the old theory that there are visual comics and comics of the ear. Berle's first radio appearance was in 1934. He later appeared as a regular on the 1936 CBS show Community Sing for Gillette, then landed his own program on NBC for Quaker Oats in 1939. His radio shows contained the same brand of slapstick that ultimately carried him to fame. He swapped insults with announcers and supporting cast, embellished cliches, and was shameless in his theft of other people's jokes. By 1948, Texaco had replaced Philip Morris, and it was with Texaco that Berle sailed into NBC television, becoming nationally famous as Mr. Television. Return with us now to those exciting days of yesteryear with The Milton Berle Show from February of 1948. Another classic show from the golden age of radio here on Yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent. Oh, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Merton Mar, Jamis, and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you so.
The Milton Berle Show. From Radio City in New York, here is the Milton Berle Show with Pert Kelton, Jack Albertson, Johnny Gibson, Mary Schiff, Billy Sands, Charlie Irving, Ruth Gilbert, our singing star Dick Farney, Ray Block and his orchestra, and yours truly, Frank Allen. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight we salute the communications industry. 72 years ago this week, to a world that had nothing, Alexander Graham Bell gave the telephone. The telephone gave us radio, radio gave us Milton Berle, and Milton Berle brings us right back to nothing. And here he is, Milton Berle.
Thank you. Thank you, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. Gallup, I'm a nothing. Are you kidding? Oh, man, I'm doing great. This is my comeback. I'm making a comeback from the place everybody keeps telling me to go to. But you're right, Mr. Gallup. What an anniversary week it's been for inventions. And what a tough lives. What tough lives those inventors led. They laughed at Edison. They laughed at Bell. They laughed at Marconi.
Then you came along and everybody stopped laughing.
You nearly didn't get one on that yourself. Mr. Gallup, I want you to watch that tonight, because when you criticize this program, you're biting off your own nose. And with that nose, you'd have to be a sword swallower. Get a load of that Gallup. Doesn't he look good? Really. What slab did you leave? Every other program has nice, fat, jolly announcers. We have the only announcer in radio who gets Valentine's from Undertakers. But let's get on to more important things. Last Thursday was Lincoln's birthday, and what a week for the Republicans.
Yes, the Republicans had their big Lincoln's Day dinner in Washington.
I was there. Mm-hmm. And what a dinner. They only had one course, roast Truman. You notice the Republicans laughed. But the Republican candidates are really campaigning. Dewey just got back from Boston. I don't say Dewey is overdoing his campaigning, but when he got off the plane, two babies fell out of his mustache. Call a writer. A new writer. But the big event, Mr. Gallup, in New York this week was the dog show that was held at Madison Square Garden. The winning dog belonged to a Broadway columnist. Really, it was a half peak and half bull. Did you... Are you with me? Did you attend the dog show, Mr. Gallup?
Well, it so happens, Burl, that this year my dog was entered in the dog show.
Your dog?
Mm-hmm, my Great Dane, champion Gustav von Inverclyde, Duke of Auchinleck III.
Gustav von Inverclyde, that's his name?
Yes, but we call him Milton.
Well, that's sweet of you, Mr. Gallup. Is he a valuable dog?
Valuable?
Is he?
He's worth over $25,000.
$25,000? That's more than I'm worth.
Well, some dogs are worth more than others.
Oh, gee, that was jazzy. Mr. Gallup, the next time that your dog drags you into the backyard to bury you, take that joke with you. And while you're there, get a writer. But let us continue... Oh, murder. But let us continue tonight as we salute communications. First, the telephone.
The coming of the telephone brought with it new problems in the home between man and wife. The phone rings. Who will go to answer it? This is what we mean.
Milton, answer the phone.
Answer it? Don't be silly. It's not for me. They're always for you.
No, this one is for you. I have a feeling.
I have a feeling. I'm not expecting a call.
Answer it.
Oh, all right. I'll go. Yes? How do you like that? One moment, please.
Well, Milton?
You were right, dear. It's for me. I'll go back and see what they want.
The telephone brought a new rich humor to American life. The practical joker. It is 4 a.m. Milton Berle is sound asleep.
Any young man steals all my jokes. Bob Hope. He's nothing. I've got to get new writers.
Milton, wake up.
What? Who deals? Oh, what is it?
Milton, get up and answer the phone.
All right. Gee, it's pitch dark. I don't know if... Ow! My toe. I broke my toe.
Don't watch. You still have 11 left.
Very funny. What's that? Ow! My back.
Yeah.
My neck. It's dark. What am I stepping on? What did you say, dear? Oh, it was the cat. Where's the phone? Oh, brother, 4 a.m. Must be important. Hello?
Hello, Milton Berle?
Yes.
Is your house on a streetcar track?
Yes, it is.
Better get it off. There's a streetcar coming.
Why, that...
Who was it, Milton?
Some practical joker. Said we should get our house all out of the way. A streetcar's coming. A streetcar's coming. He was right. Look out. Here it comes. Get out of the way. Help! 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 Ah, Mr. Gallup, the telephone. Remember those days of our youth when the telephone meant romance? Through the receiver, you heard sweet words from that one and only girl. And then sometimes in your dreary little room, you sang, all alone, I'm so all alone. There is no one else but you. All alone, by the telephone, waiting for a ring, a ting-a-ling. Thank you, Oscar. Cynthia. Golden memories of Cynthia. I remember that day we met Cynthia when I stepped into the phone booth. I didn't know you were living there. And I can still remember your tinkling little laugh when I put a nickel in your ear and tried to dial your face. That loveliness that was you, Cynthia. Your beautiful eyes. One eye said, come hither, and the other eye came over to meet it. Cynthia, my little model. Oh, you were lovely. Remember those ads before and after? You were during. It works on you, then you get to hate it, that joke. Temperamental, Cynthia. How you used to blow off steam right through the hole in your head. Patriotic, Cynthia. Remember that day that you called Washington? It was at Valley Forge, and you asked him for a new uniform. You asked him for a new uniform. Arr, arr, arr. Home-loving Cynthia. Every Saturday night, you used to call your folks in Texas. How I pleaded with you to use a telephone and save your voice. What a deep voice you had, Cynthia. Every time you yelled for a taxi, ships would stay out of New York Harbor. That's why I'm all alone and I'll keep wondering how you are and where you are and if you are and what you are. And who you are, and there you are, and oysters are, and caviar, and halibut. Wait a minute! I better quit while I'm ahead. And wondering if you are all alone too. That's the finish. That was Ray Block and the Philomarus Orchestra playing Too Short Polka. I'm just a spoofing Razy Wazy. To me, your music is like the new look. It drags. And now... The boy in the second row, are you a writer? See you after the show. Ladies and gentlemen, now as we continue our salute to the world of communications, we present...
Radio Forum tonight... Radio Forum tonight. The question. If television is still in its infancy, will Milton Berle's face make it age overnight?
Thank you, Mr. Gallup. Then let's have some questions from the audience. All right, let's start with this gentleman in the aisle with the exterminator spraying his wife. Yes, sir?
Mr. Berle, my three children were thin and anemic. But now, thanks to you, they have tremendous appetite.
Really? How come?
I just tell them if they don't eat, they have to listen to your program.
Thank you, Henry Morgan. Let us continue. All right. This young man in the third row with the snakeskin hat and face to match. Young boy stepping up here. Young man, what is your name?
My name is Winthrop Rockefeller.
Winthrop Rockefeller?
Don't confuse me with the one that just got married.
Oh, I won't.
I'm the one that's got money.
You've got money?
I'm loaded.
You are. You're loaded.
Yeah, whenever I say I'm loaded, I got money.
Whenever you say you're loaded, you got money? No, whenever you're loaded, you say you have money.
I see.
Don't read it that way, son. That attack which he drove over in a Studebaker tonight. You see. And you have got money? Is very confusing to you?
Well, yeah, we keep getting each other's mail.
Who?
fool.
Winthrop Rockefeller.
Winthrop Rockefeller, and you keep well. That's all right. All right, Bobo. You, you have a question. Oh, it'd be funny if this is an audition and we don't know it. You have a question that concerns us, something about radio?
You must be kidding with a question like that.
No, I...
You mean to stand there with your hooper hanging out and ask me that?
Now, look...
Why don't you just play it smart and shut up so maybe they won't notice you?
But I thought...
You want to know what's wrong with radio? I'll tell you, stupid.
You don't...
The trouble is you can reach millions of people, but nobody can get hold of you.
No, I'm
the
not...
The trouble is nobody can tell if you're funny or if your mother is yakking it up in the studio. Ah, your mother's Philco.
That young man will take his 3-year notice. We must not create a disturbance. Let us go on to the ladies in the audience. All right, this lady in the last row with the dazed expression and the tire marks on her face. What is your name, madam?
Tallulah Feeney. I'm a homemaker.
I see. And you're a radio fan?
Not me, my husband.
Your husband?
You hate a Dr. IQ?
Yeah.
He's Dr. Peel.
I see.
You hate a queen for a day?
Yes.
He's schmo for a year.
I understand. Does your husband attend many broadcasts?
Once he went on Truth or Consequences. They put him in a tub full of whipped cream and then give him a calf's tongue to lick himself clean.
No kidding.
They carried that fat slob home, all covered with whipped cream. I thought he was a refrigerator, so I plugged him in the wall.
You plugged him in the wall?
Yeah, but it didn't work. He's AC and our building's DC.
Terrible. And Mrs. Feeney, tell me, what happened?
His nose lit up and toast kept popping out of his vest.
I see. Does he still attend broadcast?
Not after what happened to him on Take It or Leave It.
Take It or Leave It?
He tried to take it, but they caught him and made him leave it.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Feeney. Thank you. As a fitting climax to our forum on communications, it is an honor to present a man who, through sleet and storm, keeps your telephone lines open. He is none other than the telephone company's ace line man and troubleshooter, the hardiest and burliest of that two-fisted profession, Mac Boomer Featherfield. Mr. Featherfield, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Barrow. It is glorious occasions like this that makes my heart overflow with gratitude to the thousands of people who've seen me sliding down telephone poles and getting slivers all over the United States and certain parts of the South.
I must say, Mr. Featherfield, for a man in your rugged profession, you don't look too well.
I know. It was that terrible scare I got this morning.
Scare? What happened?
I saw two vultures fighting on my front lawn.
Why did that scare you?
They were fighting over me.
Mr. Featherfield, up on those poles tapping the telephone wires all day, you must hear some very choice bits of conversation.
Ooh, ha! Last week, I had the most frightening experience a married man can have.
You did? Well, what happened?
I was fixing a telephone line near my house.
Yeah?
And I heard a man in a deep voice say to a woman, "Sweetheart, pack your trunk and leave your husband." And when I heard the woman say yes, I cried like a baby.
Oh, because it was your wife?
No, because it wasn't.
How did you meet your wife?
I was on a hunting trip. I blew my moose call, and there she was.
And your marriage has been a very happy one?
She keeps sweeping me off my feet.
She keeps sweeping you off the feet?
Whenever I'm working high up on a pole, she comes by on her broom.
Where were you married?
Well, my wife's a Michigan girl, so we had a Battle Creek wedding.
A Battle Creek wedding?
Yeah. She's been battling, and I've been up the creek ever since.
Thank you very much, Mr. Featherfield. Now, here's our young singing star, Dick Bonney, to sing Beg Your Pardon.
If I lose my head, beg your pardon for things that I've said, beg your pardon. Why should I worry the way that I do when you're in a hurry to let me love you? I'll try for a kiss in the garden. And if I should miss, beg your pardon. But if some sunny day you let me have my way, I won't have to say, beg your pardon. Beg your pardon. Beg your pardon. Why should I worry the way that I do when you're in a hurry to let me love you? I tried for a kiss in the garden. And if I should miss, beg your pardon. But if some sunny day you let me have my way, I won't have to say, beg your pardon.
Wonderful. Wonderful, Dick Carney. You know, Mr. Gallup, did you know that I was a boy soprano? Didn't you know that? Then came that awful day when I was 32. My voice changed. It went higher. The doctors diagnosed... Don't go away. They diagnosed it as a large, overacted... active. What's your line, old boy? I'm getting mixed up. We're talking about something different, and we should be talking about the communications tonight.
Exactly, and precisely, and specifically, the telephone.
Oh, the telephone, yes. This boy is due back in Gimbel's Winder in the morning. Yes, it is true. We're talking true. About communications. And it reminds me, it says here, just this week, something happened to me, Mr. Gallup, in regard to telephones that I must tell you about. And shall I? I hope the folks that are listening in are laughing as much as we are on the stage. It was last Thursday, speaking of telephones, last Saturday, and it was last Saturday, and I had just finished lunch in a drugstore here in Radio City. And I'm
here's your change, Mr. Burrell.
Thank you very much.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Oh, thanks. That's right. Today is Valentine's Day, too. And I forgot to send my wife a Valentine. I know. I'll call her up and personally wish her a happy Valentine. Here's a phone book. She's so sensitive about holidays, too. Lincoln's birthday, she got mad because I didn't send him a gift. Gee, what'll I say?
Long distance, who are you calling?
Mabel, Circle 6, 2... Wait a minute. What am I reading here off the wall? Operator! I'm sorry, operator, I get a little mixed up. I'm so nervous. I'm Milton Berle, and I'm calling my home in Jackson Heights. The number is Jamaica 5600.
Yes, sir. Deposit 35 cents, please.
Let's see. That's three dimes and a nickel, isn't it?
I'm sorry. We do not give out that information.
Okay. Here's the money. See, when my wife answers, I'll just say, I love you with a heart divine. Will you be my Valentine? Pretty good. I must have read that in Nick Kenny's column. Boy, it's getting hot in here. Operator. Operator.
Operator.
What's with that Jackson Heights call?
Sorry, sir. There's no Milton Squirrel listed for that number.
Squirrel? Did you say squirrel?
Shall I try Central Park?
No. Stop kidding. The joke's over. Just get the number.
Whom are you calling, sir?
Whom am I? Mrs. Milton Burrell. I'm Milton.
This is Milton.
Milton?
Milton, Massachusetts. Go ahead, New York.
Oh, brother. Look, miss, I just want Jackson...
Well, you'll have to deposit $2.40, sir.
But I... Okay, let me see. How many coins is $2?
I'm sorry, we do not give out that information.
I know, it must be the formula for the atom bomb. All right, here's the dough. Now get me Jackson Heights, Mrs. Milton Burrell. Burrell, B as in Baltimore, E as in elephant, R as in rose, E as in making another elephant. Now get with it, please, and get the call. Operator. Operator.
This is Los Angeles.
No.
Sorry, sir. We cannot lower bouquet to Milton Berle here in Los Angeles.
That's funny. He told me he was going to be there.
Shall I switch you back to Baltimore?
No, please, not again. Switch me back to New York.
Thank you. New York, number, please.
Hello, New York. Hello. Still snowing?
I'm sorry. We do not give out that information.
I know. Now, look, for 2 hours, I've been trying to get my wife in Jackson Heights. I'm Milton Berle. By this time, you can call me Milty.
Okay, Milty. Deposit 35 cents, please.
Another 30? Oh, all right. Here. I just want to say Happy Valentine. But I want to say it today, not Labor Day. Hurry up, please.
I'm Bavarian. How about that call?
We're ready, sir.
Good.
We finally located Mr. Milton Berle for you, sir.
You've located him?
He's in a phone booth in the drugstore at Radio City.
Oh, he is. That's funny. I just left him in Los Angeles. Now, look, dearie. Just get Mrs. Milton Berle in Jackson Heights.
Yes, sir. Mrs. Merle Hilton in Jacksonville.
Not Merle. I give up. Look, call Jamaica, 6000. That's my next-door neighbors, Sam Harrison and his wife, Martha. I'll tell them to dig a tunnel through the snow to my house and bring my wife to the phone. The Harrisons.
Yes, sir. Here is your party.
Hello?
Yes?
Is this the Harrisons?
Yes.
Is that you, Martha?
Yes.
Is Sam there?
Yes.
Martha, will you do me a favor?
Yes.
Would you call Sam to the phone?
Yes.
Thank you. Oh, that Martha. When she gets on the phone, you can't get her off.
Hiya, Milty.
Sam. Sam, will you listen closely? I'm desperate.
Well, what is it, Milty?
Listen, Sam, I want you to go over to my...
3 minutes are up, sir.
Wait a minute.
Number, please.
Operator, please. I was disconnected. Switch me back.
1 moment, sir.
1 moment. Take your time. I don't want to rush you. I don't want to rush you.
Russia, yes, sir.
Wait a minute.
Adjut, товарищ, Moscow, Russia, the planet of Yoshi. Go ahead, Kromiko.
No, no. Please get me somebody who can understand English.
English?
This is London, England. Cheerio, New York.
Cheerio, look, will you please?
It's about the 4 pounds, old thing.
4 pounds? I've already lost 10 pounds in this booth. I'm broke.
The sorry old fruit deposit the money and the whole thing's off, you know.
Okay, so I won't pay. You can deduct it from the loan. Oh, look, please. I don't want to play crumpet, old cricket. I mean, look, get me back to New York. I just want to say happy crumpet to my cricket. I mean, I want to say happy barrel.
Operator.
It's 3 in the morning.
Be patient, sir. We're trying to reach Mrs. Milton Graziano in Mexico City.
Mexico, operator. Do you know what time it is?
Hear the tone. The time will be exactly.
Operator, please, look. Let's try it this way. Blindfold your eyes.
Yes, sir.
And just plug in anything in front of you.
Yes, sir. This is Jackson Heights.
I knew it would work.
I have Mrs. Milton Berle on the line.
Mrs. Milton Berle? I can't believe it. Quick, I want to speak to her.
I'm sorry, sir. She doesn't want to speak to you.
She don't want to... Mrs. Berle says... Please, she don't want to speak to me.
Mrs. Berle says any man who won't take 2 minutes to phone his wife on Valentine's Day isn't worth living with.
2 minutes? Let me talk to her.
She just hung up. She's leaving for her mother's.
No, no. My wife is leaving. What am I going to do without a wife?
I'm sorry. We do not give out that information.
I just wanted to say happy information. Oh, this is silly.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
From February of 1948, it's been the Milton Berle Show. In a moment, Adventure in Africa with Tarzan, Lord of the Jungle, as yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Tarzan came to radio in 1932 in what was generally come to be regarded as the earliest major syndicated series. James Pierce, one of the early screen Tarzans, played the Lord of the Jungle in this 15-minute, three-times-a-week serial. Joan Burrows, the creator's daughter and Mrs. Pierce in private life, played Jane. In all, more than 350 chapters were produced, featuring such accomplished artists as Gail Gordon, John McIntyre, and Jeanette Nolan in supporting roles. The serial continued in that 15-minute form until 1935. No other major attempt was made to bring Tarzan back to radio until 1951. The new Tarzan, ironically enough, was a canned series much like the first. Unlike the earlier version, however, this was complete in each 30-minute installment. In 1952, the program was bought by CBS under sponsorship of General Foods. It continued 1 year on the network as a Saturday night show and enjoyed a healthy rating. Return with us now to those exciting days of yesteryear with Tarzan and Tarzan and the Arena of Death from April of 1952, another classic program from the radio vault of yesteryear.
From the heart of the jungle comes a savage cry of victory. This is Tarzan, Lord of the Jungle. From the black core of dark Africa, land of enchantment, mystery, and violence, comes one of the most colorful figures of all time, transcribed from the immortal pen of Edgar Rice Burroughs, Tarzan, the bronzed white son of the jungle. And now, in the very words of Mr. Burroughs, the story of Tarzan and the Arena of Death.
In the ever-important search for food, Tarzan was ranging a part of the jungle unknown to him. With the keen alertness of the wild creature, he was alive to all that was strange and unusual. No sound escaped his ears, no scent went unidentified from his keen nostrils. For those of the jungle, eternal vigilance is the price of life. Suddenly, Tarzan stopped. The scent of man was strong.
Sagio!
A native calls for help. You are hurt.
Mercy, Buava!
Do not be afraid. I'm Tarzan. What?
The Lord of the Jungle, right?
Now be quiet now and rest. I'll get you water. You feel stronger now?
Yes, Tarzan.
Who are you? What are you doing alone in this country?
I am Wanji from the city of Ortho.
Ortho? The name is strange to me.
It is to the east. Two suns.
2 days away. What brings you here?
My master, Thorvald, the king's brother, brought myself and others to hunt meat for our city. The lion men attacked us.
The lion men?
Yes. It was they who killed the others.
You're the only survivor of the hunting party?
But for my master, Thorvald, they took him prisoner.
These lion men, why are they so called?
They train lions to hunt and kill. They attack our village, kill many elephants which masters have trained to work.
Your masters are wise. An elephant can do the work of many men.
We are helpless against the lion men. They kill game in our valley. We must travel far to find meat for our people.
Well, the jungle has food for all. Where do these lion men live?
In the city of Victa, at opposite end of valley where my people live.
Ortho? Victa? Those names are from a past civilization.
The lion men are many and powerful, Lord of the Jungle. What can be done?
Your master is a prisoner. A powerful force threatens the peace of the jungle. We go to the city of Victor and the Lion Men.
We'll return in just a moment to our story of Tarzan and the Arena of Death. Tarzan's jungle-bred knowledge made the trail of the lion men easy to follow. Wanji, the native of Ortho, hurried to keep pace with the swift-moving lord of the jungle. Presently, the screams of Tantor, the elephant, came to Tarzan. Even louder was the roar of Numa, the lion.
Tantor is in trouble. Hurry!
Look! Tantor has fallen into pit! Numa, stand guard!
The lion men must have left a trained lion to watch over their quarry. We must release the elephant.
Oh, but the lion, it will kill you.
That may be. I'll take the chance. Of all the beasts in the jungle, I count the elephant as my best friend.
The lion turns. He sees us.
Stay back, Wanji. Numa roars a challenge.
With a mighty earth-shaking roar, the king of the beasts sprang toward the lord of the jungle. Knife in hand, the lithe bronze body of Tarzan hurtled through the air and fastened itself securely around the lion's back. A sinewy arm was flung around the beast's neck as Tarzan found a handhold in the shaggy mane hair. Long, muscled legs locked around the lion's shanks. Numa plunged, carrying Tarzan with him. Tarzan's knife flashed in the air once, twice, again and again as its sharp point sought a vital spot. And then the lion fell. Tarzan leaped from its back, put his foot on the vanquished lion's body, and loosed the victory cry so often heard through other jungles and plains.
Come. We will release Tantor.
Elephant killed?
I do not think so.
Deep cuts on back of elephant.
I will dip a bamboo stick in the mud of the riverbed and treat his wounds.
One tusk is dark.
It has been discolored. A distinctive mark. He's probably king of his herd.
He is big, Tarzan. How will you get him out of pit?
With my knife and your spear, we will dig a ramp so he can walk out. Back close to the river, the ground is not hard.
Then we will again follow the lion?
Yes, they cannot be far now. They must plan to return to get this elephant.
After Tarzan closed the elephant's wounds the best he could, he and Wanji set to work with spear and knife to excavate a ramp. Tantor, the pain of his wounds eased by Tarzan's crude but effective treatment, seemed to sense that these two strange men were his friends. He stood quietly, swaying gently from side to side as they worked.
There. That's complete. Yo, Tantor, Bundo. Handy. Stand back, Wanji. It's best to be cautious.
The great bull climbed slowly from the pit. As he came out, his sensitive trunk passed over the body of Tarzan in what was almost a caress.
Look, Tantor leaves peacefully. He does not harm us.
The bull will go back to his herd now, and his wounds will heal. Come, we must move swiftly after the lion man. They passed here not long ago.
The river tells you this?
No, these tracks. Come on. The scent of the spore is fresh. We'll climb to the top of this rise. We should catch sight of them there.
You climb too swiftly, Tarzan. I can't.
Look, Wanji, down there. The jungle falls away to the plains.
The lion men.
A score of lions followed by perhaps 100 warriors, and the lions behave like so many trained dogs.
Tarzan, the lions turn. They see us.
No, Wanji, they only catch our scent. The wind has shifted.
They are turning this way. They're coming after us.
Travel fast, Wanji, to your city of Ortho. Tell your king we'll need many men.
But you, Tarzan, what of you?
They will chase me while you escape.
The lions will tear you to shreds.
Not unless they've also been trained to climb trees, Wanji. It's our only chance. Go now, quickly.
Good luck, Tarzan.
Tarzan stood his ground as the lion men picked up the scent and started toward him. When Wanji was out of sight, Tarzan turned and raced in another direction. The lion men followed with the snarling, roaring beast straining at their leashes, but could not keep pace with Tarzan.
Release five of the lions.
The five lions sprang from their masters and bounded after the lord of the jungle. The jungle echoed their roars. Had they been wild lions, they would have stalked their prey in silence. But now they raced upon Tarzan with savage fury. The bronzed white sun felt their breath on his neck as he hit a jungle vine and swung with all his might into a friendly tree. The lions leaped to seize him. Tarzan watched the snarling beast below him, and then the surrounding lion men approached and leashed the lions. Tarzan dropped from the tree into the midst of the men.
Bongo, Bongo, Hoto, Horus, guard this man. Put him with the other prisoner. We will return to Victor. You are silent? Have you nothing to say?
Nothing.
You ask for nothing, no mercy?
Nothing.
You are a fool. Surely there must be something you want.
I would not ask anything of an enemy.
Horus, take him away. We go to Victor.
Get in there, wild man. Join the elephant man of Ortho.
You are not familiar to me.
You are Thorvald?
Yes. How did you know of me?
A native of your city, Wanji.
Wanji? I thought the lions killed him.
He was lucky to escape. He's now on his way to Ortho.
Good. My brother Ortho and the king will be after us.
Thorvald, how do you account for the names of these cities, Ortho and Vikta? They're from a language of another continent.
Well, it is said that in another age, a band of people came from the other side of the great water in search of peace. Of these, only a few reached this valley. Even they quarreled among themselves and soon split into two groups, each setting up their own cities and gods.
And they're still enemies?
The people of Ortho are concerned with the fruits of the land. We have trained our elephants for work in the fields, and our crops have been abundant. Those of this city, Vikta, are hunters. They kill many and plunder villages.
A great difference.
Indeed. As the people of Vikta breed lions, we of Ortho breed elephants. Their god is Thus, the lion. Ours, Dias, is an elephant.
I only hope Wanji arrives safely in Ortho.
It is a long way. We may not be alive by the time my people arrive. We must escape.
There's little hope for that. These iron walls are strong, and the lions outside are many. Oh, the guard. There are others with him.
Well, it is good to see the prisoner in such good spirits.
Go back to your lions, Savage.
Silence, elephant men! You dare to speak to one of Vikta in such a manner?
Talk will only work against you, Thorvald.
I do not care what these pigs of the jungle think. They can do nothing worse to me.
He wants to see what else we can do.
Do with me what you will. I do not fear your insane actions.
We shall see, Thorvald. Come, let us make sport with this noble elephant man. Chain these two to those racks over there against the wall. Now heat that iron.
I am sorry, Tarzan. I fear it is I who caused this.
Quickly bring that iron!
You must not weaken now, my friend.
Dying is not easy.
Perhaps there's still a way. These chains are weak with rust.
They would kill us either way.
We're not dead yet, my friend.
Ah, Thorvald! Your eyes widen at the sight of this red-hot iron. Look at it well. It is the last thing you will see.
The guard moved toward Thorvald with a hot iron. Tarzan strained at his chains. His mighty chest expanded to capacity. Sinewy muscles, hard and rigid, fought at the iron links.
He has broken the chains!
Look out! As the chain dropped to the floor, Tarzan sprang at the guard with savage fury. His hand twisted the red-hot iron bar from the man's grasp and flung it to the far side of the prison. The other guards leaped on Tarzan, fighting to stop his onslaught. Tarzan was indeed a man possessed with a taste of freedom. Two men went down under his relentless blows, but the odds were too great. The guards fought back to the heavy iron doors, and once outside, slammed them shut against Tarzan's might.
Hey, you fool! You will never know mercy.
I ask none.
We shall go to our king and tell of this devil with the strength of 1,000 men. Vikta shall surely choose a fitting death for such a savage.
I owe you my life, Tarzan.
You owe me nothing, Thorvald. I would have done the same for Numa in the face of such inhuman action.
We are doomed now.
We can still hope that Wanji arrived safely at the city of Ortho and is returning with Orthon and his warriors. The guards are returning.
Victus the king is with them.
This is the wild man, mighty Victus.
So, Tarzan, you thought you could stand up against the lion men, huh?
Indeed, I tried.
And for such a mighty warrior, it is only fitting that your death befit you. We have something special planned.
So?
Tomorrow, in the great arena of Vikta, all our people will turn out to see your great strength.
Am I to fight lions?
No, wild man. Tomorrow, you and Thorvald die in the arena, trampled and gored to death by our rogue elephant.
In just a moment, the exciting conclusion of Tarzan and the Arena of Death.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
They will be here shortly, Tarzan.
I know.
We shall die.
I know that also. There's nothing unique about that. Many people have died. Many will die.
Does it frighten you?
No. We must all die. What matters is how we die. If we meet death courageously, there'll be no regrets.
Myself, I'm glad that an elephant is going to kill me. I'm an elephant man, and I bear the title with pride.
I should prefer the lion, for the elephant has always been my friend. My very best friend, perhaps. I do not like to think that a friend must kill me.
The one in the arena today will not be your friend, Tarzan.
No, but others have been.
You think there's still a way out?
I always hope. It is possible.
Prisoners, we go now to the arena.
We're ready.
The people of Victor await their sport.
Half a hundred warriors of Victor, all in their best trappings, their freshly burnished arms shining in the sunlight, formed a procession in front of the palace. A full 100 lions, tugging on their leashes held by the warriors, roared their power. Following, herded by 4 huge black-maned lions, came Tarzan, Thorval, and other doomed prisoners. A full company of warriors carrying banners and pennons brought up the rear. Victius sat majestically in the royal loge. The procession moved past the cheering citizens, whose anticipation of thrills was heightened by the rumors of Tarzan's strength.
They're being taken to the arena. There we will watch while the others before us are killed.
Those gates blocking both ends of this corridor, they do not seem very strong.
They do not have to be. No one can escape.
Ah, the arena is filled now. The events are to begin. There are other victims before us.
Look. That giant who's entering the arena now is Mayak. See, he carries a sword and a spear.
He's a lion man?
The favorite gladiator of the people.
And the man facing him, he's armed with only a small dagger.
It'll be more of an execution than yours.
That was over with quickly.
Poor fellow. He had no chance.
I think I could have defended myself against Mayark the giant.
Careful. The guard overheard you.
You think you could have defeated him?
Well, why not? He's clumsy and stupid. Most of all, he's a coward.
Perhaps we can arrange an encounter for you after the next event. In all Victor, there is none more courageous than Mayark.
I can believe that.
Look, yes. They're letting a lion loose into the arena.
Oh, that lion is old. Most of his teeth are gone.
But he is a killer.
Yes, he is still a powerful brute.
I suppose you think you could defeat a lion, too.
I have.
The beast roars for an opponent.
But if Maya kills you, we will never know if you could have killed the lion.
I will fight them both at once if Maya is not afraid to go into the arena with a lion.
I will see about this. It would indeed be something to watch.
Why could you say that?
Didn't I tell you I'd rather be killed by a lion than an elephant?
I wonder what they plan for me.
We will find out only too soon.
Mighty Victus, permit me to speak.
What is it, God?
The bronzed one called Tarzan laughs at our sport.
He finds himself facing death and he laughs?
Tarzan says he can defeat both the giant Mayak and the lion.
And the elephant man, what is he to say?
He says nothing, but he seems unafraid.
This should be an interesting performance. Perhaps we can make it more difficult for these brave fools.
How do you mean?
The elephant we captured last night. He is mighty and a vicious rogue. We shall put all three against Tarzan and Thorval.
Oh, wild man, it is arranged. Even more to your liking, perhaps.
What do you mean?
It seems you are honored, Tarzan. You and this elephant man will go into the arena together. Not only with Mayak and a lion, but the rogue elephant as well.
The elephant too?
Yes, and a fine specimen of beast, as wild as a maddened bull.
What does Mayak think of this?
I think he does not like the idea. But if Mayak can kill you before the lion and the elephant are let into the arena, he will be made a captain.
Are you ready, Thorval?
Yes, Tarzan.
Follow me. You will take your places in the center of the arena immediately.
Stay behind me, Thorwald. I have a plan.
I can't let you face him alone. He has a spear and a sword. We have nothing with which to defend ourselves.
Oh, you're wrong, my friend. We have our wits.
The giant Mayak ran toward the two men, holding his spear in front of him. Tarzan stood his ground as Mayak lunged the spear point at the naked breast of the Lord of the Jungle. Tarzan seized the shaft of spear and wrenched the weapon from Mayak's grasp, hurling it to the ground behind him. As Mayak reached for his sword, Tarzan was upon him. Steel sinewed fingers seized the giant and swung him around.
The lion is loose.
Stand perfectly still. If you try to run, it will chase you.
It is trotting toward us.
Yes, but it's a small lion, pitifully emaciated. It has evidently been starved to make it ravenous.
Mayak shows fear, Tarzan.
I will give this Numa something to eat.
Tarzan's words struck terror into the heart of Mayak. He struggled fiercely, but could not escape the vice-like grip Tarzan had on him. As the lion approached, Tarzan moved to meet him, pushing Mayak ahead of him. Just before the beast launched its lethal charge, Tarzan gave Mayak a tremendous shove directly toward the lion. Mayak turned quickly to one side and broke into a run. Tarzan stood his ground. Not a muscle moved. The lion turned from Tarzan and Thorlo and pursued the running Mayak. Directly in front of the royal loge where Victia sat spellbound, the lion sprang, and Mayak went down to a mercifully quick end.
Release the elephant.
Quickly, then. We don't have much time. I'll dispose of the lion.
As the lion stood growling over the body of Mayak, its back toward Tarzan and Thorvald, Tarzan sped with the swiftness of Sheeta the panther and leaped astride the cat. The mighty elephant caught Tarzan's scent and started across the arena. Tarzan grasped the lion by the mane and loose hide on its back. He lifted it bodily, at the same time swinging and whirling the beast with him. It was the lightning quickness of his act that made it possible. That and his great strength, as with one superhuman effort, he flung the roaring beast into the royal loge of Victius. The lion clawed at the king, lashing his taloned paws out as he fought from one loge to another.
Tarzan, the elephant.
Get back!
Enter, stop it.
Yes. He has a discolored tusk. Wanji and I released him from a pit.
He caresses you with his tusk.
Quickly, climb on his back. We'll batter down the logs of the palisade. Nada heyo! Mudo! Mudo!
The elephant gathered Tarzan and Thorvald in its folds and lifted them to its head. At a sharp command from Tarzan, the mighty beast whirled and charged across the arena. With lowered head, the great bull crashed into the flimsy palisade at the inner end of the corridor. Then the outer palisade fell before him. He carried Tarzan and Thorvald out into the plain and toward freedom.
Look behind, Tarzan. Already they're pouring out of the arena to give chase.
Before long, they'll be organized and in full pursuit. Once they lose the lions, we will have little chance of escape.
Look ahead, beneath that cloud of dust. The racing elephants of Otho coming at full charge.
Sanji, he's brought your people. But now we're right in the middle of a full-scale war.
Closing in rapidly, the opposing groups met with a clash as Tarzan and Thorvald wheeled the bull elephant to lead the charge. The mighty elephants of Otho scattered the foe right and left, and the foot warriors closed in behind to thoroughly rout the lion men, who were not prepared to meet an attack of such proportion.
The Victians retreat, my friend.
Yes, my people have shown their strength.
Their retreat is cut off. The sign of surrender is called.
Perhaps this will be the last of our battles.
Oh, but the toll of men is great. Come, Thorvald, let us go to your kingdom. Victius and Orthon, I bring you together under a flag of truce. You both seem stunned by the useless slaughter of so many men and animals.
We have long been enemies, Tarzan.
What is to be gained by killing?
Tarzan is right. We could live in peace.
I am ready, Tarzan, to abide by your suggestion.
And you, King of the Lion Men?
I will obey.
There is no reason why you should be hereditary enemies.
We're all of the same ancestors.
You, Orthon, have taught your people to work the fields and produce abundant crops.
That is true.
And you, Victius, have taught your men to hunt well.
Yes.
Together, your peoples have all that is necessary for a bountiful life. You can work and provide each other with the fruits of your labor.
I am willing to accept this plan, Victius.
Yes, Orthon. We shall be friends. Welcome to our valley.
I know this peace shall be a lasting one. And now I must return to my home.
You have done us a great service, Tarzan.
And I shall never forget how you saved my life.
Oh, Tantor saved both our lives, Thorvald.
Yes, it was amazing. That elephant remembered what you had done for him.
The beasts of the jungle are not given enough credit. Like humans, they too will welcome kindness. And when they return that kindness, it often means the difference between life and death.
Included in our cast were Jack Moyles, Bob Bruce, Victor Rodman, and Charles Seal. Tarzan, a creation of the famous Edgar Rice Burroughs, is produced and transcribed by Walter White, Jr. Prepared for radio by Robert Schaefer and Eric Freewald, with original music by Albert Glasser.
From April of 1952, it's been Tarzan and Tarzan and the Arena of Death. Well, I'm afraid that's all the time we have for today, but join us again next week and invite a friend to listen. Together, enjoy more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those fabulous days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. Comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite show.
Preceding program copyright Edgewater Productions, all rights reserved.